Hello and welcome to another episode of The Rawcast.
The Rawcast!
With me and...
Beth.
Beth Rawls, vocal coach and YouTuber. How are you doing today, Beth?
I'm good. Tom's called me in for a podcast and I don't know.
Well, I've called you in for a podcast because I just worked out that it's been 203 days since we last put out a podcast. And so we thought we'd do another episode of In Focus, where we just take a topic and we kind of chew through it, basically, don't we? So today we're going to look at the process of learning.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, because at the moment, one of the reasons we haven't done the podcast is because I have started a second channel called Roar with an exclamation mark at the end.
Yes.
And one of the things that I'm doing on this channel is I'm exploring new skills or just kind of fun things to do and pushing myself out of my comfort zone and seeing what I can learn about the process of learning. And it's been amazing.
Absolutely. So let's dig into that second channel, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we set up a second channel just called Raw, and we're going to look at a kind of broader range of educational content. You've basically got a format where Beth goes and learns either over a short period of time, i.e. just a few hours or a day, or perhaps a slightly longer period of time, a new skill or something that she wants to try out, and we kind of document that through the process of one video. Tell us why you wanted to do that.
I just thought it would be fun, and I think it would be good for me as well. I thought it would be good for me as a teacher to push myself out of my comfort zone, as it's something that I ask of my pupils every day. So with singing, it's something that I have become comfortable with, and even when I'm scared, it's probably not quite in the same way. So I really wanted to take myself to places that were completely new for me, that would make me feel scared and would...
What put you in the realm of being a consistent student,
mm-hmm.
as well as obviously you're on the other side of that all the time and being a teacher and helping people through their own learning process.
Yeah, and it's been really helpful in my understanding of how people feel and my empathy towards... Not that I wasn't empathetic before, but because I hadn't been in that situation to the same extent in quite some time.
Yes.
It really reminded me how it feels.
Yeah.
To be completely new at something, because it's a really vulnerable situation.
And I know that you said that obviously, yeah, you set up because you thought it'd be good for you and it'd be fun. But also I think that you're someone who is really passionate about just learning, about the process of learning. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's fair?
Yes, yes.
Do you enjoy learning?
Sometimes. No, I do. I do enjoy learning. I do enjoy the process, probably more than some people. Like, some people really enjoy the goal, looking at you over there.
Mm.
Whereas I think I do enjoy the process of learning things a little bit more than you.
Yeah.
And sometimes the goal doesn't matter as much, although... Well, I'm not going to give too many details and we'll probably talk about this in a bit, but we did have some goal mishaps.
Yeah, I mean, not everything about the... I mean, obviously, when you try and learn something new, it's not always going to go perfectly. What do you prefer? Do you prefer learning something or do you prefer teaching something?
Oh, both.
Watching other people through their learning process?
You know what? I would have said teaching before I have done this. Because certainly with singing, I get more pleasure out of seeing someone else maybe achieve a goal or even just become a little bit more confident in themselves or feel like they're more able to communicate. Any of these things, I get more joy out of that than perhaps me going out and singing somewhere and feeling like I did well. But in a situation where it's completely new, there have been moments that have been so completely completely thrilling to be like, oh my goodness, I never knew I could do that. And I didn't think that I ever would in my life. And now I have. So both now. I think it's when something is truly new and you do prove yourself wrong, then that is a really thrilling experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are saying that you have changed your answer actually since we've been making the content in the last few months for this channel, that you before would have said teaching, but now you're saying both equally, and you've a new love for the experience of learning as well.
Yes, but also I think that I really enjoy about teaching kind of the same moments, but those moments are happening for other people, those moments where they prove themselves wrong and they realize, oh, I can do that thing. Those are the moments that I love in teaching. So actually, I just haven't had that moment for myself for a long time.
I am lucky enough to be on the other side of this. I get to go and film Beth. And I think that my answer would also have changed because I am obviously not a teacher. So I haven't really been as acutely aware of other people's learning process. But I've really enjoyed being there, filming everything, watching you learn far more than I enjoy most learning processes myself, I think. As you correctly identified, I am a person who I think puts quite a high degree of expectation on myself through the learning process. So I go into something with a very fixed goal of where I want to get to. And I find the process quite agonizing of all of the time that you have to spend when you're learning something where you're not at the goal and you just have to work to get there. And then you get to the goal and you look back and you think, oh, well, that was worth it. But on the way, I find my frustration levels can be quite high, as you well know. What do you think that relationship is like between expectation and learning?
I think expectation actually really gets in your way. And, you know, one of the main ones I've done recently that has been a massive hindrance for me. We haven't released it yet, and I'm looking through the footage and I realized that I came on so quickly at the start, and as soon as I realized, oh my goodness, I have to make a video out of this and it has to happen soon, actually my process slowed down a bit. And that's okay. And actually with this particular thing, I'm keeping it vague because I want to surprise you guys, but I want to continue on with this particular skill and I really, really enjoyed it. So I am going to continue on, and that's okay because it's part of the learning process as a whole. But that expectation of yourself can really hinder you. And it's kind of allowing yourself to be at any particular point in that learning process. You are just where you are and you can only do what you can do in a particular moment. So you might as well enjoy that particular moment and do the best you can in that particular moment. And that's all you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more that you get in your own head about not being where you feel like you should be, then it's really counterintuitive, because the more you're aware of where you think you should be and you're not, the more you get in the way of yourself taking on actually the information that would get you to that place as well. So you really slow yourself down. On the other side, how important is it to know what you are working towards, and how do you balance that between knowing where you're going but not sort of crippling yourself with expectation?
I think even before this learning process, I had kind of given up on goals, particular goals.
Which is really, I mean, that is, you're one of the only people who's ever said that to me, and I find that really interesting because you actively love putting your time into learning, into acquiring new skills, but you specifically do things without having a goal in
yes.
mind.
Yes, personally, and this can be a really, some people are, you know, everyone's different and some people need a goal. But for me, I can set a far away kind of vague goal and that's fine. And then I need to let it go and just focus on the individual small sections of learning. Like today I will do the best I can on this particular day. And all those tiny bits will add up to your goal probably. And if they don't, at least you've had a good time on the way. But if I just focus on that goal, I'm stressed and anxious the entire time and I'm not enjoying the thing that I'm meant to be learning. So it kind of defeats the point. Like, what's the point in doing any of these things if you're not enjoying it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, progress is not linear, is it?
No. Sometimes you go backwards and people find that really hard. I find that really hard.
And equally, sometimes I think that you've obviously increasingly found in your teaching, you kind of have to undo something and something will feel more unstable in order to get to, in the end, a more stable place than where you were.
Yeah, I mean, that happened with my singing and it happens with my pupils. But if there's perhaps a habitual way of singing that is fundamentally like not going to sound that nice, but is fairly stable or is pushy or is a little bit unhealthy, then to fix that, yeah, it can make everything wobble and make you feel really unstable in your voice until it kind of settles into the right place again. But then when you find that new way of doing things, often it will allow you freedom in your voice, allow you more stability, maybe allow you higher notes, whatever you need. But that process can be a little bit tricky, knowing that you're going to go backwards before you go forwards. It happened with me. It happens with loads of people.
How much do you entertain the concept of right and wrong in your teaching and your learning?
I don't really believe in that much right and wrong. I believe a little bit in unhealthy and healthy singing. But I have been thinking about this a lot recently because there's many, many people in the world who sing really unhealthily. And like, that's what their voice is. If you listen to Brian Johnson from AC/DC, that's not a particularly healthy voice, but it sounds really cool. So I don't really want to entertain the right and wrong. I would like people to have longevity in their voice so that they're able to do lots of shows and not fatigue. But I would also want them to be authentic to themselves. And I think if you're the sort of person that loves technique and loves perfection, then perfect. Go and like learn that perfection and get into the nitty gritty. If you're a person that loves like freedom and everything to be a little bit messy and rocky or like whatever, then explore that side. Neither of them are particularly wrong. You'll know when it feels right to you.
Yes. So in the knowledge that progress is not linear and that we have these kind of peaks and troughs with it, in the moments that we do feel like we're going backwards, obviously, I think self-doubt is quite a normal part of the process. How do you deal with that self-doubt when it comes along?
Well, you'll find a video at some point where you see me crying in a broom cupboard. So that's how I apparently deal with it.
But it is normal, isn't it? Every single person, I think, when you are approaching something new, will ask the question, can I actually do this?
Yes. And I think knowing that is normal and just being like, okay, this is where I am right now. And also, when you're at that point, just being kind to yourself and gentle with yourself, actually, giving yourself breaks. I'm not good at that myself, but sometimes stepping away from the learning process, not particularly for a long time, but giving yourself a weekend off or even a week off your class or whatever, if you need that, to come back and just give it your all again the following week. Because I think that we feel like we need to, you know, we live in this capitalist society that means that we have to go, 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 and we have to achieve all these things now, now, now. And actually, sometimes we just need to take a step back, reflect, see where we are, and gain a bit of acceptance of that place, and then go into it.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that you found that even with singing, obviously, as a skill, and actually it's a recurring theme really with most of the skills, the more effort you put in is not equivalent of the quality of output that you get back.
No.
And that sometimes I know that you find that people take extended breaks. You know, you're talking about a weekend, but extended breaks and come back to you and actually have found, oh, this thing that I was trying to work on for months and months and was really struggling with, it's kind of somehow settled in, even though I haven't been doing that much practice and I haven't been doing lessons.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Because obviously we're very focused in the way that we think about learning as the more hours that you put in, the more output that you're going to get and the more your quality will increase.
It is different for every person, but I think certainly for me, that it definitely works for me. When I start doing something, I'm putting in the work, and you do need to put in that required work often. But then, personally, I'll probably get into my own head. I'll start overthinking it. I'll start overdoing it. And it stops working. And that space allows that skill to kind of settle in without me getting in my own way. I also think that maybe there might be a little bit of delay. I'm not like a neuroscientist or anything, but there might be a bit of delay for your body and your like conscious mind to catch up. Like, I found that along the way a lot. There was like this, my body would be in the place with sports and things. And my conscious mind would be in the right place. And so it seems like, cool, I should be able to do this. But I knew that there was always this subconscious doubt going on. Once that doubt had dissipated, I would gain that skill. But it took time. It took more time than knowing what to do and physically being able to do that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that comes back to, you know, obviously I'm not saying, and sorry to any of Beth's students listening, I'm not saying that you can just take a couple of months off and you're definitely going to be better at whatever you're working on. No. But it really does. I think what we've always come back to is the headspace with which you approach something.
Yeah.
And the fact is that sometimes when you are really trying to get one particular skill or facet of your skill, and you're just repeating it and repeating it and repeating it, you can work yourself into a headspace where you're not going to make the most progress. And the only way to get out of that is just to give it a bit of a break. And whether you go and work on a different part of your skill and come back to it, or whether you just take a break completely, it can be beneficial.
Yeah. And singing is really psychological, but I really think anything is. Like, there's been so many lessons that, like, I've gone through. Individual little things that I know are going wrong. Maybe it's a bit of tongue tension, or maybe they're not placing it right. But at the end of the day, actually what's causing that is just the fact that someone's stressing out. And the physical things that are happening within the singing often are symptoms of a mental attitude. So sometimes it's like, right, we've talked about all these physical things that are happening. Forget about that and just tell yourself you can do it before you can do it. Just stop, say, I've got this. Now let's try the song. Sometimes that works. Like, that works more often than not. Mm. And suddenly there's no tongue tension and the placement is perfect. And all they needed was to believe in themselves. And it sounds so cheesy, but it really does work.
Yeah, or equally, taking your mind completely into something else. Yeah. I think can also be a way, if it takes you out of your own head and you have a completely different focus.
Yeah.
I know that's something that you obviously work with singing, doing something in a completely different way to what you believe is right. And often it is actually deliberately doing something, right, I'm going to approach this in a way that is kind of silly,
or
is a way that I would think normally is wrong, and then I can't worry about it being right.
Yes.
And just in doing that, then you take loads of pressure off yourself.
Like, make it sound ugly, or make it sound the extreme of a certain sound. Or I often get people to like shake around and dance while they're singing, because if you're doing that, you're not tensing up and stressing. And then often suddenly their voice just flies out. And because you're not holding everything and all that tension in your body, you're just shaking and enjoying it. So the only way that you're going to be truly skilled at something, I think, is by either doing enough or by being relaxed enough. I think that's a really important thing, that sometimes, like, when you get kids who are amazing, they just think they can do it and therefore they can do it.
Do you think you can learn how to learn? And do you think that that is something that, you talk about kids there, do you think it's something that that would be possible to teach in schools?
Yeah, I think you can learn how to learn. I've learned so much about learning and I've become better at learning. Like, actually, I've been surprised in, like, most of the situations at things that I have thought that I wouldn't be good at. People have been like, oh, well done, you did really good for a first session. And I think that mostly that's not because I'm particularly talented at any of those things. It's just because I've spent a lot of time thinking about how I learn things and what I need to listen to and what I need to look out for, I guess. And not getting stressed in those situations. And the times I did get stressed in those situations, I didn't do as well.
Yeah. And as a result, one thing that we even emphasize to the people who are going to be teaching you is that we're not actually striving for perfection.
Mm-mm.
And it's that thing of expectation, again, isn't it? That's what it kind of boils down to. You really try hard to go in there without any expectation on yourself of how you're going to perform in a particular area.
Yeah.
And just allow yourself to kind of be that sponge and take in as much as possible.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if you don't achieve that skill instantly. And also, sometimes things take a really, really long time. And that's okay.
So do you think that do you think it's possible to teach it?
Teach learning.
In schools?
Yeah, I think it is possible to teach learning. I mean, I think that we should be teaching all sorts of things around mental health in schools, and learning and being able to be in a positive mindset while learning should be probably one of those things.
Yeah. And just a positive mindset.
In general.
Full stop, I guess.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be around learning, but I think it kind of stems from a lot of mental health.
Yeah. And the expectations and pressures that you put on yourself to learn are the same expectations and pressures that you put on yourself to succeed in other areas as well.
Yeah, and I think the pressures are put on kids. I think kids are given boxes as to what they're good and bad at really early on. And that's been a major hurdle for me. I've pushed myself into things that I really thought I wouldn't be good at in this channel because I've been told that I wasn't good at those things.
Those first images that you are set up with by whoever, by anyone who you really perceive as any sort of authority, whether it be a teacher or your parents or your siblings or just friends,
yeah,
peers. Those early ideas that you form about yourself, about these are my skills, these are the things that I'm good at, really stay with you, don't they?
They really stay with you. And those are the moments as well. Those are the things where I really struggled to not put an expectation on myself, which is so strange because I didn't think I was good at something. And then suddenly you're watching YouTube videos of people who are amazing at the skill and being like, well, why can't I do that? And then it's such a bizarre thing that we all do as humans, go from like, well, I can't do it at all, so I'm going to look at the world's best at this thing and wonder why I'm not them. And actually, that's not reality. You're never going to do that, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I think one thing we've found with going to these videos is that you don't know. People have often said to you, oh, you've picked this up really quickly. And you are always surprised by that. But part of it is that we never really get to see the early stage of that learning process, do
yeah.
we? So although you know as a teacher how quickly someone may or may not pick up singing or kind of like all of the different variables there in terms of all of their previous experience. And I'm not just talking about singing professionally, I'm talking about just singing through their own childhood. All of those things affect how quickly you're going to pick something up.
Well, so many people's for me, they'll always be like, oh, I'm so sorry on the first lesson. Oh, I'm so sorry, this sounds terrible. Or how do you listen to this all day? And I'm like, well, actually, it doesn't. One, you hear yourself a little differently because you're hearing yourself and you're perceiving yourself, whether it's through whatever skill, through your own filters about yourself and the stories that you tell yourself about yourself.
Rawr. Okay, so to celebrate Christmas, we have a little twist on the quickfire round, Beth, which you normally ask, but today you're going to be answering questions.
You know what? This is so nerve-wracking. Now I know what I put people through.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, are you ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1. Real tree or fake tree?
Real tree, but we got one that's planted in the ground so we can plant it outside.
Yeah, which is quite cool, isn't it? Like we get to replant our tree and then watch it grow throughout the year and then maybe even dig it back up for next year.
Maybe, or we'll get a new one.
Yeah. Do you prefer to give or receive presents?
Give presents.
There's pressure on that one, isn't there?
Yeah, you have to seem nice. Yeah. No, I do though. I think I do like to give presents.
Do you prefer coloured lights or white lights on your Christmas tree?
White lights.
Yeah, we differ. Home Alone or Elf?
Elf.
Oh, both great films. I think I'd go Home Alone. Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Or I'll let you on a third one, Boxing Day.
Boxing Day? No.
People love Boxing Day. I don't love Boxing Day, but people do love Boxing Day to sit around and eat Christmas leftovers and watch some films. And like, people find it more relaxing than Christmas Day itself, I think.
I liked making Santa's food pile for Christmas Eve, but it has to be Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, yeah. I mean, the food, the presents.
Family, it's all nice.
I've got to agree. Mulled wine or pumpkin spice latte?
Mulled wine.
It's a very bougie question, that, isn't it? Christmas cake or Christmas pudding? I put this one in just because I know that you
don't like either.
Hate both.
Maybe the pudding, because at least I just have the inside. I don't have to worry about the horrible marzipan. So
Beth doesn't like marzipan, but she also doesn't like any sort of cake with the raisins in, basically. So either of those things are it's a lose-lose situation. I was going to put mince pies in, but then I thought Christmas cake or mince pies.
Yeah, but mince pies, I don't like that much either.
Fine. Okay, the colour red or green, since they are the two defining colours of Christmas.
green because I already have red on my head.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. A ginger reference there. Christmas jumper or Christmas socks?
Socks.
Socks?
Yeah.
As in, like, being given socks at Christmas or just, like, Christmas-themed socks you prefer?
Yeah, I like Christmas-themed socks with, like, robins on or something.
Everyone always thinks of socks as sort of the duff Christmas present.
God, I like... If they've got a padded sole, I'm really into that.
And do you prefer to do... I mean, this is... You can tell I wrote this question before the latest wave of COVID swept the nation. But do you prefer to do your Christmas shopping online or in person in the shops?
Online, because I'm a little lazy with shopping.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much that you can get now as well, isn't there? And in terms of... I know that you're a person who likes to buy experiences for people rather than just a physical thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you online. And that is the end, and will lead us back to the second half of the podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think it's commonly bandied about now that, like, we need to be open to failure, which is extremely easy to say and extremely hard to put yourself in the mindset for, right?
Mm-hmm. I think the only way we can do it is by failing a lot and getting used to that. It would be nice if that was allowed more within the education system, and it wasn't so much about exams or you have to be a certain way because people are developing at different speeds. I mean, I certainly found that as well as a child, because we've talked about this. I went school a year early, so it was interesting for me growing at perhaps a slightly different speed as some of my peers who were that year older than me.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously spoken about that, haven't we? I mean, you basically went from, I guess, the expectation in yourself and from your teachers of being a sort of high achiever and then jumping up an entire year, skipping an entire year because you were doing so well. And then obviously you're 1 year then behind everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You go from feeling ahead to just feeling behind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is a really interesting thing to have happened to you. And I think that you then see kids that you're teaching who feel like they're in either one of those areas.
Yes.
And you can kind of relate to both because you were literally there.
Yeah, that's really true.
So speaking then about the kind of education process as a whole, I think that both of us can only come at this from a fairly narrow, like, Western UK specific point of view. Do you think that the way that we approach education in this country kind of to a point hinders the way that we can pick up and learn as adults in later life? So obviously we kind of have this system where in primary school you have, I think, generally a much more fun approach to learning. It's generally a little bit more fluid. There's less pressure. You're picking up some basic skills. And then you kind of are funneled into this system where you're exposed to a few things. You have to then pick the things that you are passionate about, which is completely, completely fair enough. And then the further you go up, the more you have to funnel out the things that you don't want to do professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything becomes gradually higher and higher stakes, higher and higher expectation. Mm-hmm. And you end up having to put all of your time into one particular specialist subject, if you like.
I guess what, by the time you go to uni?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you're only working on one thing at that point. And do you think that then as adults, I think that what we see is that people are reticent to go into and kind of, in a weird way, embrace that primary school feel again.
Yes.
Of like, I'm going to just go into something and have fun and have absolutely no expectations and just try something, because we've had the system that funnels us up and tells us, well, actually, the only thing that really you should be learning is something that is basically going to be your job or that you're going to be really, really good at.
I mean, I've lived a bit of a bizarre life in this way, in that, like, I have been a little bit more able, or I have lived a bizarre life compared to a lot of people, because I've had to do a lot of different things in being self-employed, and sometimes that happens and people get thrown into that, but that was necessity. I don't think that humans, this is going to be a very definite statement, and obviously it's not going to be for everyone, but I don't think generally humans thrive just doing one thing. And actually, we had an awesome quote that we saw a friend of ours put up on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Josh.
Yeah.
Who is one of the first ever guests on the podcast as well.
Yes. Josh Alamu, very inspiring guy, vocal coach. Go check him out. He said on his Instagram, and this is really interesting for me because I've been called this, jack of all trades, master of none. This, have you got the actual quote up so we don't paraphrase it?
Yes. So we obviously hear jack of all trades, master of none.
Yes. And that's what a lot of people have called me in the past.
Yes. As kind of an insult.
As basically. An insult. As yes.
Just like you can do a lot of things, but not a lot of them well, basically.
Yes.
But the full quote is actually jack of all trades, master of none, though often better than a master of one.
Yeah.
So it's actually saying if you have a lot of different skill sets, but you're not necessarily a master of any of them, that can still put you in a better place than being just the master of one skill and having, whatever, no other interests or sub skills.
Yeah. And you do find this, though, like, even people who really do specialize in something, like, you go to someone who specializes in a specific type of science. Like, I teach a lot of scientists who just want to go and sing and learn another skill. So a lot of people who are doing something very, very specific and have to really focus still take the time to find other skills and fun, like find a hobby that's fun for you that allows you to do another skill. And it doesn't have to be serious skills. Some people it works to be like what I do and do a little bit of everything. Obviously, I do have, again, a little like my specialist skill of singing and working with voices. But for most people as well, just finding the thing that brings you joy. And then, you know, if you want to change hobbies in 6 months' time and try another thing, do that too.
Yeah, or have multiple going on. Obviously, people struggle to find the time sometimes in their lives and amongst work. But yeah, not being afraid to try multiple things, have multiple different things going on. I think it can be really stimulating and ultimately relaxing. And it makes you better at your actual, whatever your actual craft or job is. You end up kind of being able to approach, being more open to learning during that as well.
Well, that quote on Instagram was really good timing for me from Josh, because I have been thinking a little bit about, because I've been doing more general learning than I have ever done really in my life or since I've been a kid. And so I have been spending a lot of time thinking about other things than singing. And I had a few moments of guilt of being like, oh, I haven't been focusing on my learning on singing as much. But actually, when it comes down to it, when I think about the things that I've learned about learning, about the psychology of learning, practical things like watching other teachers work in their environments and how they approach different situations has been really helpful to me. So you don't know what you're going to learn. You actually might find that your greatest lessons will come from a really unexpected place.
How important do you think it is in the learning process to have a particular personal relationship? I know Josh came up just there, and obviously he is a he's been a great influence for you in terms of taking you on that learning process, but also opening you up to realizing how much that you can learn and develop your skills. Do you think you can learn on your own by just taking in as many different things, books or whatever, online courses, as many different mediums as possible, but without that one personal relationship?
Yeah, I do think you can learn that way. I don't think it's the most efficient way to learn. I think that if you find the right teacher for you, then that person can definitely shorten the learning time that's required. But also it's really hard when you're by yourself because you're not always necessarily aware of what you need to learn. Most people know something is wrong, but they don't know what it is. Like with singing, they'll be like, it doesn't sound nice, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, can you tell me why this doesn't sound nice?
And most of all, I think you have to find someone who you feel like you can be vulnerable in front of. Because you're going to have someone who you can fail in front of and feel comfortable or feel supported.
Yeah. That's something that I think I find interesting as an adult. The feeling of being vulnerable. And I think maybe that's like a massive deterrent for a lot of adults to learning a new skill, because we're meant to have everything together. We feel like, as an adult, I feel like I'm meant to be able to control my life, and you have to let go of all control, and that is terrifying, and you might be emotional like me in those moments where you feel like you're really out of control in front of people.
Yeah, I think that your approach to the way that you channel your emotions into these things is actually incredibly healthy, because as you hinted at earlier, we do have a part of a video where you are crying in a broom cupboard. Mm-hmm. But I do have to say that 10 minutes later, you were back out in the audience of the event that you were performing in and with a smile on your face and supporting everyone else there. Whereas most people, having felt like that didn't go the best way for them, wouldn't feel able to do that.
Yeah, well, maybe that's part of my motto of going back to childhood learning and crying like a baby.
Not crying, but just yeah, enabling yourself to feel vulnerable and not feeling embarrassed about that, and then letting it out and then being able to move on. You're very good at moving on after something's happened and putting it behind you and still giving your all at the next time.
I think that I don't ever want that bad emotion. I think it's part of being a performer as well. I've done enough bad gigs and I've messed up enough times that I don't want that to affect my entire career or my entire enjoyment of whatever I'm doing. And when I was younger, it really did. Like, I would have a bad gig and I would beat myself up for days and days and weeks, years maybe, about that, and it would take me so long to gain my confidence back. And I think maybe it's just an age thing of being like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that partly it's down to society again, what we kind of think is acceptable. Gary Neville has a sports podcast called The Overlap, where he talks to different kind of sports personalities about their journey through sport, and he has a segment in it which he bases around a quote by John Sinclair, failure is a bruise, not a tattoo. Which obviously is extremely well-meaning, and it's basically saying that you'll get over your failures and they won't be significant. But actually, I kind of look at that quote and I think maybe failure should be the tattoo and the thing that you celebrate in some circumstances. Do you know what I mean? Failure is the thing that stays with you, actually.
Yeah.
And it's the thing that then makes you a success.
Yeah.
So sure, it doesn't have to be the defining moment, but I just think that's quite an interesting quote anyway. Yeah.
But it is taking it as a learning experience in itself, like the big failure that we keep on hinting at. Those moments are moments, like I've learned from that. I've learned maybe not about the particular skill in a weird way, but I've learned about my psychological reaction to pressure.
Yeah.
And to certain circumstances.
But we've talked about that is even going to be helpful to you in your future approach to learning, but also to teaching.
Yeah.
So in a way, that failure
Yeah, it's a massive success.
It's more helpful in some areas, in a lot of ways, than it would have been if, essentially, Beth had done this thing and she'd done it perfectly multiple times, actually, for about 2 weeks before this performance, and then it went wrong.
Yeah, we did a big performance in front of my mum and dad.
In front of some paying audience members as well.
Yeah.
And it didn't go well. Yeah, Beth had invited her parents, and obviously there was that kind of expectation there. And just in that particular moment, as can happen, especially when you haven't put your, whatever, your 10,000 hours into learning something, you don't have that thing to fall back on. Sometimes live performance goes wrong.
Yeah.
On this particular moment, it did go wrong. But yeah. Literally, that failure may well end up being better for you in the long run. And so in that way, it is the tattoo for you.
Yeah.
It's not the bruise. It's not the thing that's going to go away. It's going to be the thing that informs more of your life going forward than if it had gone perfectly, as it had done in multiple rehearsals for kind of 10 days beforehand.
Yeah. You're making me emotional again, thinking about it. Being like, oh. But you are absolutely right. It is... If you can take all those, it won't feel nice.
No,
like you have to accept that you're not going to feel good, and like that emotion will pass. Like the emotion of feeling bad and the failure will be the bruise, but you don't want to forget about it. You want to learn from it.
But the failure itself may be the thing that you end up taking something from and actually celebrating in the long run.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, look, I think on that note, thank you very much indeed, Beth. For opening up about your failure, but for doing this whole podcast.
Oh, thanks, Tom. For inviting me to my office.
To record an episode of your own podcast.
Yes.
And look, we very, very much look forward to recording more episodes on the new channel going into the new year. And we would love your general ideas that you would like us to suggest, areas that you would like us to explore. We're really, really open to kind of going anywhere, as long as it's loosely related to the process of learning and acquiring some kind of new skill.
Yeah, and it is really interesting how every single video has made me think about something that I wouldn't have otherwise.
So, Merry Christmas to everyone. Yes. Whether you're someone who normally celebrates Christmas or not, have a wonderful
holiday season.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, please do head over to the new channel, have a little look. It's youtube.com/roarrar. So that's like roar, R-O-A-R, and then the rar is R-A-W-R.
Yes, we will also put a link in the description of this podcast if you don't want to type all that out. And yes, please do get in touch with any of your new ideas, and we really, really look forward to making some more things for you in the new year, including some more podcasts that don't take 203 days to come out. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. And we can leave it at that.
'Cause from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.